Morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be learning together Direi Hayomim Beis, Perek Yud Beis, the 12th chapter of Direi, the second book of Direi Hayomim. Our topic is Rechavam and Shishak. Our Perek contains 16 psukim, is broken into basically two sections, one about the siege of Shishak and then the end of the days of Rechavam. The parallel parasha to be found in Sefer Melachim is Melachim Aleph, Perek Yudalad, and the last part of the Perek from Pasuk Chaf Aleph onwards. It is important to note that we actually just jumped over a couple chapters in Melachim. We skipped out the whole story with the curse of the house of Yeravam, the building of the shrines, and the fulfillment of the curse of the north. So, as we've seen, Direi Hayomim, Ezra HaSofer, does not spend so much time focusing on the stories, the travails of the north. He spends more time focusing on the south. In fact, the story we're about to hear is mentioned in Melachim, but it is given much fuller time here in Sefer Direi Hayamim. Our first section is from Psukim Aleph to Yud Beis, the first half of the Perek, in which we hear about the siege. So the first thing we hear about is a very disappointing part of the story, where we hear that as his Malchus of Yeravam gets stronger, Keches Kosoi, as he gets stronger, Ozav es Toras Hashem. So he left the Torah of Hashem, Kol Yisrael Imoy, and so to the nation of Israel as well. And as a result of that, in the fifth year of his reign, so this is pretty early on in his kingdom and kingship, we hear about Shishak, the king of Egypt, comes against Yerushalayim because the Tanakh is adding on Kimalu b'Hashem, because Israel rebelled against Hashem. And we hear about these astronomical size of an army, 1,200 chariots, 60,000 horsemen, innumerable troops, and he has mercenaries from Libya, Sukkites, Kushites. It's a really large army. And he sweeps in and takes over many of the smaller cities, the Ariam and Tsurois, the ones that he'd already fortified, and they come to lay siege on Yerushalayim. At this point, Shemaya Hanavi, remember Shemaya had been the one who spoke to Rechavam before and about desisting from civil war, comes to him and he's in Yerushalayim and he says to Rechavam and to the troops, Komar Hashem, so says God, Atem azavtem osi, you abandoned me, va'afani ozavti eschem biyad Shishak. I'm going to abandon you to the Egyptians. At that point in time, they really took it to heart and they humbled themselves and they said Tzadik Hashem, that's called Tziduk Adin, where they acknowledge and agree with the judgment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has meted out to them. And when Hashem saw this, he said, you know what, I'm not going to destroy them, I'm not going to make Yerushalayim fall to the hands of Shishak, and therefore these people have now, the Jews, have humbled themselves. So that's what happens. Actually, Shishak comes to Yerushalayim, he empties out Oitzreis Beis HaMelech, the king's coffers, and he takes everything of value, which is a large amount of money, as we've seen from the times of Shlomo. He takes the golden shields that Shlomo Melech had adorned the city or his palace with, and instead Rechavam afterwards replaces them with shields of copper. And we hear about this interesting thing that whenever he walks outside, his guards lift up these shields as he walks, and then they return them to their places. And that's the end of this story. And because of their humility, Hashem did not allow Shishak to fully destroy the Yerushalayim. So that's what we hear about this. It's just worthwhile noting in an interesting note. In the commercial world, in Indiana Jones, in the Raiders of the Lost Ark, the claim that is made archaeologically is that Shishak took the Aron Havris, the Ark of the Covenant at this point in time, to Egypt, which is why it ended up in the Temple of the Sun, according to them. That is clearly not evident from the Hebrew Bible, from the Tanakh. So just anyway, this is where they point to. But that's clearly not what's going on here. Now, what led to this? To understand how did this devolution happen so fast and furious? The Malbim points out a very simple thing. If you serve Hashem because you love Hashem, then you're going to serve Hashem in any situation you're found in. But if you serve Hashem because you need Hashem, because you fear Hashem, there's something that He has, then maybe when you get that something that He has, then maybe the service disappears. So when Rechavam understood that being religious and spiritual would be in fact a magnet for him to strengthen his kingdom in the south, and people would therefore turn to him and support him, and then he needed Hashem to fortify his cities, they need to serve Hashem. But once his cities are fortified, and once people have already come to him, and now he no longer needs Hashem in the same way, that's what happens here. And therefore, his true character, which is perhaps more of a convenient lifestyle, comes out, which is the unfortunate way that's being described over here. Who is Shishak? So Shishak is actually described academically as Sheshonk the First, and he is either called Sheshonk or Shishak. He was in the 10th century before Common Era. And we actually have a lot of writings of his. So we hear he comes from a line of princes or sheikhs from Libyan tribal descent. And he in fact, as the king of Egypt, he attacked Israel, not just the south, but he actually attacked the north and wrote records about this. We found records of his name in Megiddo. He has a temple in Karnak where there's descriptions about this conquest as well. Why did he come now? So, politically speaking, he saw this as an opportunity. Here, the dominion of Shlomo Melech has weakened, and now the kingdom has split. Shlomo Melech had huge coffers. It's now time to reestablish the Egyptian rule in the Middle East. That's why he's doing it. But Tanakh adds, and the sort of Nevi'im are saying, is the reason why is because Kimualu b'Hashem, because they rebelled against Hashem, so Hashem ultimately allowed this person to come in. So he has his own intentions. Hashem is allowing this person to be the tool of his destruction. What's this whole business about the gold shields being replaced with a copper shield? So the Rashi explains that what's happening over here is that every time he'd walk out, they'd raise the shields. This would be a sign of honor to Rechavam, and he still wanted some semblance of honor, even though he couldn't afford the gold shields, which had been abducted by Shishak. Now, Abravanel says no, a very different way of reading this. It is that he would never leave his house. After this event, when he was embarrassed, humiliated by the Egyptians, he could never leave his house without the protection of his guards who had raised their shields. So the only place he would go was his palace and the Beis HaMikdash, and any time he went between the two, he'd have the guards raising their shields so that he'd feel protected. It shows you a terrifying thing. You know, here you have Shlomo Melech, who was so well loved, his son, within 5 years of his of kingship in his reign, is too scared to step out of his door because the masses may not, in fact, want him and may want to assassinate him because of this humiliating defeat. That's a pretty drastic shift. The Malbim says that it's actually telling us a different story. The Malbim explains over here in Dirayamim that a very beautiful idea is that this was to be a sign of his eternal humility, meaning every time he walked into the base of Midrash, to his house, to his palace, he'd look up and he'd see these copper shields, and he'd look at them and realize they weren't gold. And then he would think, why are they not gold? It's because I sinned. And because I sinned, I need to remain humble. So the Malbim sees this actually as a spiritual evolution, as the way that, in fact, he's trying to humble himself as well. I wonder if in Koheles, there is a very, the Koheles has numerous times where it talks about a father leaving wealth to a child, and the child either losing it before he gets it, or losing it or squandering it. And Koheles talks about how this is a chola ra'a. It's a terrible evil that he sees in the world when he sees this happen. I wonder if Shlomo Melech is projecting into what's going to happen from his life to his son, and perhaps the premonition of knowing this is exactly what will happen in his life. Finally, we hear at the end of the Perek Yud Gimel to Tezayin. In this section, we hear about Rechavam actually lives in Yerushalayim. He took the throne at the age of 41, ruled for 17 years, and we hear that his mother is, her name is Naama Ha'amonis. And unfortunately, we're told Vayas Hara. He is generally speaking, over at the aggregate, he did bad. Kilo heichin liboy lidrash Hashem. He didn't prepare his heart to serve Hashem, whether that means to say actively or just passively. He wasn't prepared. And then as Ezra does many times in Sefer Devarim, he gives the references to the other places where he drew from this information. So he talks about the words of Shemaya Hanavi, Ido HaChozeh, and all other places that can be found to hear about this. And we hear about the fact that Rechavam and Yerovam never had peace between them. Apparently there must have been skirmishes because they are related to these in these different books. And finally, he passes away and is buried in Ir David, in the city of David, and Aviah, his son, or Aviam, takes his place. How do we get to this? Why? This seems to be such a sad development. So Barbanel explains that perhaps it's because, and that's what the Pasuk is emphasizing, his mother's name was Naama Ha'amonis. Remember that Shlomo Melech married many women for political reasons, for peace with the neighboring kingdoms, and part of that was criticized in the sense that he brought in these foreign women who actually set up a mizbeach, a bama, to their gods, and one of the gods that they were serving was Amon, the god of Amon, in Yerushalayim. So the Abba Barnel says perhaps the Rechavam was a product of one of those marriages, and maybe Naama is in that sense the negative influence on Rechavam from the start. So it's we'll call it part of his nature slash early nurture. The Chida says no, it's quite the opposite. If you look into Chazal, you see that Naama was a great tzaddikus. Naama was a very holy convert to Judaism, to the Israelite monotheistic tradition, and she brought a tremendous amount of good into the culture of in the Israelite culture at the time of Shlomo Melech's family. And therefore the pasuk is actually going in the opposite direction and saying, look, Shlomo Melech had everything. He lived in the city Asher Bacha Bo Hashem. He lived in the chosen city, Jerusalem. His mother was this great tzaddikus, and yet still he didn't work hard enough. So this is to the chagrin. This is unfortunately to a demerit of Rechavam, why these good things are being mentioned as well. We close this perek, and Be'ezras Hashem will start next the next segment about the Malchus of Aviyah. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.